Welcome to the Iowa Blues Showcase, episode number 36. Tonight's a special show. It is the 100th birthday of my hero in the blues here in Des Moines, and that is Jimmy Pryor, the Midnight Cowboy, who I met in 1991 down at the old Grand Avenue Lounge, which became the Grand and then later Blues on Grand. And it was always a blues bar, even before Kim, who had the Grand Avenue Lounge. It was Vicky's Poorhouse. Technically wasn't a blues bar, it was kind of a flop house, but Jimmy and Chicago Rick told me they both played there, and they played there together. So yeah, there was blues going on there for a while. And I always tell this story because I think it's kind of fun, but Vicky's claim to fame, legendarily so, and I don't know how true this is. This is stories I've heard from Rick and Jimmy and several others, that when a guy got out of jail and he had his parole papers, he got the drink free for the day. Hey, now that's our kind of blues bar right there, folks. So, anyway, now anyone who's followed the podcast, we've talked about Jimmy before. There's two different days that he's considered his birthday. He believed, and his family believed, he was born on February 5th of 1916, so last year would have been his 100th birthday. However, Living Blues went and looked up driver records and birth certificates and all sorts of things, and they came up with February 5th, 1917. And the only reason that we know this is that when I published an article in Living Blues about Jimmy Pryor, the editor decided that that was something important to put in. I just don't know why, but yeah, I guess it is. When you think about it, as a historian, you want to be right. So the official birthday is today, but I'm sure the family celebrated it last year, but we're all going to celebrate it again, because you can't celebrate 100 too many times, right? Now, in West Virginia, 1917, he basically learned to play piano on a player piano. It was his stepmom's, because his real mom had died when he was young. And his stepmom had this player piano, and she would have people come over, and Jimmy would sit at the piano when he was a little kid, and he would just, as the keys moved, he would move his hands with it. And then he eventually was able to learn piano that way. And he went to high school in Mount Hope. Graduated age 16, which sounds early, but really it isn't. You know, back then, actually sticking around till you were 16 would have been quite the accomplishment. Most people would have left in sixth grade, especially in West Virginia. This is coal mining country. But Jimmy stayed till he was 16, and imagine what happened was he had to go to work, because as he told me, he worked for 10 years in the coal mines up there. So I'm just assuming that's what was going on. So Jimmy worked for 10 years in the coal mines, and then he briefly worked for the railroad. So that would have went from 26 to 28. When he turned 28 is when World War II started. And at some point, I don't know if he went to Detroit first or if he went to the war first and then went to Detroit, something like that. I'm sure I have it in my Living Blues magazine that I can't see right now. It's somewhere buried in the studio here. So, Jimmy went off to fight World War II. He was in the Red Ball Express. He used to drive the trucks because African Americans weren't allowed to fight in the European theater. So they were mostly did supply stuff. Although there were guys that fought, there was this Tuskegee Airmen who ran missions. They were fighter pilots. So there were, but as far as frontline soldiers, they were excluded. And so mostly they ran supply And the Red Ball Express is one of those legendary outfits. As Jimmy pointed out, they would run at night. They'd put tape over the headlights so that you could, just a slit of the light would show, and they called it cat eyes. And then that way, the Germans, when they were trying to bomb them, hopefully wouldn't see them. Of course, Germans did see them and would attack them. But Jimmy survived all that, came back, lived in Detroit, became a musician, played with a lot of the cats from Detroit, but probably he knew John Lee, they used to play the same clubs, so he was there from the end of the war until about 1960, and in 1960, Jimmy wanted to play, and he wanted to play somewhere where it was 24 hours, because Detroit, the bars closed at 2. And the booking agent said he had the place for him. There was a guy named Mel Harper in Des Moines, Iowa, that had the Billiken Theater, or the Empire Room, and the hole. That was the basement. And Mel would hire Jimmy for 2 weeks to replace Pee-wee Creighton, he played his two-week engagement and was heading out to L.A., so Jimmy had this great chance to take that spot for 2 weeks. So he arrives, and Mel sets him up, and he plays for 2 weeks. And Jimmy Pryor never went home, stayed there. I believe the story is he brought his singer with him, Sweet Georgia Brown. The two of them were an item. Of course, Jimmy he stayed in Des Moines, started another life, and played the blues. And he played the blues. He also he worked day jobs. He had a regular career during the day. I think it was, Wallace Farmer. It was a custodian back when they used to pay you good for that. And I know, because I've been there. I pushed a broom myself, and when I was pushing a broom, they weren't paying it well. But the custodians used to pay you halfway decent, even had a pension. Jimmy did. Jimmy retired and continued to play the blues. We get up into the 70s when blues was kind of on a downspin, and then Jimmy was playing country throughout the 70s. But he would still play blues, played a lot of after-hour clubs. He was a bartender for not only Mel Harper, but several other people. He would work these after-hour places that served alcohol and food and gambling and music. And Jimmy would keep going doing that. And then in the 90s, I met him for the first time, like I said, at the jam session. And Jimmy was, at this point, he was no longer playing guitar. He was playing kazoo. And the reason he's playing kazoo is that arthritis in his hands had pretty much kept him from playing guitar. And what you're going to hear tonight, this recording is from 1967, is Jimmy was a pretty good darn guitar player. Doesn't play a whole lot of leads, but you can tell he was a very tasty player for contemporary people in Des Moines. It would be like a John East or Scott Eggleston style jump blues boogie type stuff. It was a really good guitar player. So in the 90s he picked up kazoo. He was mostly playing jams, and probably the biggest mistake of my career was when in 91, when I first met him, I should have put him in the band right away. That I didn't. I don't know why. Basically, in 1999, this is 8 years down the line, and first time I met Jimmy, he was 77, so he was like 84, 85 when when I decided to start a new music career again. Mid-90s, I took like 5 years off. I wanted to have a jam session and kind of build something out of that, and talk to the guy at the Hull Avenue. And he said, sure. And so Jimmy, I hired him as the lead singer and brought in Woody, John Woody Wood, Scott Long, Jim Farr. We started this jam on Sunday nights after Super Bowl in 1999. I believe Denver had won that. I can't remember exactly who they played. Might have been Green Bay. A long time ago. So after that, Jimmy, started playing with us. And then by spring, so basically we'd only played maybe 2-3 months going into this. And we built something really huge out of Sunday night. And then Scott and Woody had a separate band called Fat Tuesday. And so Jimmy was playing with them as well on the weekends. And then the Bad Boys of the Blues was doing the Sunday jam. And then down the line, Fat Tuesday and Scott, we split ways. They went one way and we went the other. So Jimmy kept playing with us on Sunday and kept playing with Fat Tuesday on the other nights. And then eventually the Bad Boys of the Blues started playing during the week. We also were instrumental in getting the Iowa Blues Hall of Fame going and several other things. And, Jimmy was the reason for all that because he brought, prestige to what we were doing, because he was the real deal. He was the real blues man, And the thing about Jimmy that I won't forget is that he taught a really good lesson about life. And that is, you gotta love everybody unconditionally. Because I'll be honest with you, there were people in the time that I knew him, all the way up to when he died, that occasionally would take advantage of him. And I never liked that. But Jimmy didn't seem to mind, because for him, it was kind of like this. You know what? Whatever was in the past is in the past. And bygones be bygones, and we just start all over again. And I know it sounds kind of contrary to the world we live in today, but when you think about it, it's a pretty smart thing to do. Because if you love people unconditionally, at some point you think they won't take advantage of you. And the other thing nice about it is, okay, one or two may take advantage of you, but think of all the other people that it's going to do good for. And the best example was, we were at Carl's one night, me and Jimmy just hanging out there, and this kid come up and was talking to Jimmy, and they were just going on and on about how great Jimmy was and how him and his dad would come and watch Jimmy, and he was like, and we haven't seen you in a while, and it was great seeing you again. And the way he was talking, I figured Jimmy knew who this kid was, because he's acting like, this kid's an old friend. And so when the kid left, I go, Jimmy, I said, who is that kid? He said, I don't know. And that was him. He loved his fans unconditionally. Didn't matter if he knew you or not. He was your best friend. And that was the beauty of Jimmy Pryor. That's pretty Christian if you ask me. And the other thing about it is that, Jimmy's big hero was B.B. King. He had met B.B. once up in Detroit, way, way, way back in the 1950s. And there was this show, and that, B.B. was putting on a show, and then all the guitar players from town came around, and they hung out with him, and they went out and they ate and had a good time. And Jimmy escorted B.B. all around town. And B.B. was really nice to him. And, of course, this is before B.B. got really, really big. So it was a big deal for Jimmy. And so Jimmy gets to meet his hero, It would have been like 40 years later. Well, even more than that. I think it was in the 2000s. We went to see BB. And we went backstage. And there's this huge line to go see him. But everybody sees Jimmy. And they know who Jimmy is. And they just let him go right up to the front of the line. And Jimmy goes to talk to BB. And BB has no clue who Jimmy is. And it's really sad. You know? And I could tell, you know, Jimmy was bothered by it. But again, I think it was the difference of personalities. You know, BB is probably thinking, I don't know this guy. I met a bazillion people and just let it go. But if Jimmy was sitting in that same spot, he would have pretended he knew who he was and would have liked him and welcomed him and slapped him on the back and said, yeah, I remember those days. Because that's what Jimmy would do. He would make everybody feel good. You know, and I don't know that that's so much a lie, but you know, I just think it's just being nice, you know. And Jimmy was the nicest person I ever met. And in many ways, you know, my grandfather died when I was a freshman in high school. And I only had one. My other grandfather died before I was even born. And so I kind of felt like I really missed my grandfather. You know, that bond, you know, that family bond, and it wasn't there. And, you know, Jimmy replaced that. He was like a grandfather to me for many, many years, and kind of filled that hole. And kind of always be grateful for that. All right, we better get going. This is getting crazy. Yeah. So tonight we're listening to Jimmy at the Pines in 1967. It's called One More Time. Lee Bell took Jimmy's original recordings that I believe were on open reel tape, and he fixed them up to listening quality. Now the band tonight, you're going to have Jimmy obviously singing everything and playing guitar. No kazoo, because he didn't play the kazoo back then. And you're going to know why, because when you hear him play guitar, it's like, wow. Saxophone, who's going to do all the leads, is Walter Akis. Carl Burse is playing bass guitar, and Robert Cox is on the drums. And like I said, Lee did all the engineering on this years and years later in 2000. I'm not sure if this CD is available still. If it is, Cheryl Pryor, Jimmy's wife, may have some. If you're interested, email me, and then I will get in contact with her and see if she has any for sale. This is it's gonna be a fun show. So Jimmy, I know you're up there watching down on us, and I appreciate all the help you give us. And this is for you, my friend. Happy 100th birthday from the Isle Blue Showcase, Mr. Jimmy Pryor.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. At this point, we present to you the Jimmy Pryor Show from the Fellas Pines Dinner Club, North 6th Avenue. We present to you a live show at this point. Thank you, and welcome to the show. Thank you.
in San Francisco. High up on a hill, they seem to know where there's little cable cars. They climb halfway to the stars. They seem to sail all the way for me. I don't care. in town again. I'll play the part again. One more time. Yeah, we go again. The phone will ring again. I'll be her fool again. One more time. I've been there before, and I think I'm gonna try it again. But any fool knows there's no way to win. Yeah, we go again. She'll break my heart again. But I'll take her back again. One more time.
Someone shakes my destiny.
In my world, a man can live and yet can't die. Touch my heart, feel the hurt is destroying me. I try, but I can't seem to shake a memory. Touch my heart, feel the hurt, the pain and misery, and tell me again what love can do for me. Go. I just don't love you anymore. To live together is a sin. So please release me, oh my darling, and let me live again. I say I have found a new love again. And I will always want her near. Her lips are warm, yours are cold. So please release me, oh my little darling, and let me live again. Just don't want you anymore. To live together will just bring misery and pain. So please release me, oh my little darling, and let me live again. Try me, ooh. I need you. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. So good, 'cause I got you. Well, I feel nice. Sugar and spice. I feel nice. Sugar and spice. So nice, so nice, 'cause I got you. So good, so good, 'cause I got you. So nice, 'cause I got you. Hey! I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women that just want to give me one. You find me standing on the corner, 12th Street and Vine. You'll find me standing on the corner, 18th and Vine. With my Kansas City baby and a jug of that Kansas City wine. Well, you know, I might take a plane, might take a train, but I have to walk, I'm going, I'm gone. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy way of loving, just wanna get me some. Boy, but you know, yeah. I'm playing with that woman. No, I'm gonna die. About a brand new, bad new city. That's the reason why I'm gone. Kansas City, here come. They got some crazy way of loving. I wanna get me some. There goes my only possession. Now there goes my everything. I hear footsteps slowly walking as they gently walk across the lonely floor, and the voice sounds saying, darling, this will be goodbye forevermore. Now there goes my reason for living. Now there goes my only possession. Now there goes my everything. As the memory turned back the pages, I can see those happy years go by, and the love that kept this little heart beating has been shattered by the closing of the door. Now there goes my reason for living. There goes the one of my dream. Now there goes my only possession. Now there goes my everything. Now there goes my only possession. Now there goes my
midnight hour till my love come tumbling down. I'm gonna wait till the midnight hour till my love come into your eye. Gonna hold in my arm. Ooh, yes I am till the midnight hour. Well, when the midnight hour, I'm gonna wait till the stars come out and love may come into your eye. I'm gonna wait till the midnight hour till my love come tumbling down. I'm gonna hold you, squeeze you. Ooh, yes I am in the midnight hour. Well, when the midnight hour. I'm gonna wait till the midnight hour, till my love come tumbling down. I'm gonna wait till the midnight hour, till my love come tumbling down. I'm gonna hold you, squeeze you. Ooh, yes I am in the midnight hour. Gonna wait on the midnight hour. Gotta wait till the midnight hour. Gonna wait on the midnight hour. Ooh, yes I am. I'm gonna hold you in my arm. Ooh, yes I am in the midnight hour. Well, in the midnight.
Yeah. Midnight Cowboy himself. From 1967 at the Glorious Pines Supper Club in Sailor Township, just north of Des Moines, near Firestone, and on 6th Avenue, going from basically just barely north of the Des Moines city limits. It was Smokies, and then there was the Pines, and then there was at least one more right next to it. And then clear up the highway, there was Davies. And then there was a bar across the street. So, I mean, when you got outside of town, there were a lot of places. Now, I was 5 years old, so I didn't go to the Pines. Although, I probably went to Davies, because Davies was a restaurant. And they had really good chicken. I believe it was pan-fried chicken. And so I remember eating there at least once, and probably more than once, but not the Pines. I think the Pines was a nice place. It was a supper club. It wasn't like a bar. And so they served food. And like I said, I did go into the Pines in the 80s to see Verlin J play once. And those of you who are not from Des Moines, probably even if you are from Des Moines, you may not know, but Verlin J was one of the local Elvis impersonators who was really good at his job. He even dressed the part. Unfortunately, Verlin has passed on a few days ago. Or not a few days ago, sorry. Several months ago, maybe even a year ago. Played the Pines, and it was a supper club, and because of its location to Firestone, the old Ford plant, which used to be clear over on east of East 14th, John Deere, which was up to the north in Ankeny, being right on 6th Avenue, which was a major way to go between Ankeny, where John Deere was happened to be located. If you went on 6th Avenue and kept going north and north and north, then you get to Ankeny, Iowa. And there it was. So a lot of guys from Des Moines, especially those that lived in the neighborhood, they would drive there, and the Pines and Davies and these other clubs were places that they would stop and eat and listen to some music and drink a beer or a shot or whatever, and then either go home and then do it all again the next day. Those clubs thrived in the 1960s, and then kind of tailed off as society changed and people's habits changed. So there it was. And again, Lee Bell did a great job saving those. I'm sure there's got to be some other recordings that Cheryl might have. So I'm hoping that if she does, maybe we can get them on another podcast. To keep the blues alive and keep Jimmy's spirit alive. She does have a scholarship fund for kids at North High School. And again, if you'd like to donate to that, email me and then I'll get a hold of her and then we can hook you up so that we can keep music going. North High has some really cool programs for blues and jazz. I know that Don Brown's brother, D'Artagnan Brown, does a summer program there for North kids. And Dart is an amazing musician, lives most of the time in California, but a lot of time he lives here in Des Moines. And just an incredible professional, and he's just helps the kids with both jazz and blues, and a incredibly nice guy. Like I said, Jimmy's scholarship hopefully can help kids continue on with their musical studies. All right, well, I gotta go. Just so you know, I'm actually doing this on Sunday night. I've been monitoring the Super Bowl in the I Could Care Less Who Wins. But last time I looked, the Falcons were ahead. I'm just gonna look again, just so you know that we're doing this at 8:46 p.m. Central Time, right here in Des Moines, Iowa. And of course, New England's coming back, but there's only 5 minutes and 53 seconds. I certainly hope they don't have the ball. No, it looks like Atlanta has the ball. All right. So Atlanta with an 8-point lead in the ball with 5 minutes and 53 seconds. So, yeah, you know it's what's going to happen. They're going to come back and win, aren't they? Those darn Patriots. Well, hey, it's the Blues, baby. It's been a weird year. It's just going to keep getting weirder. You know, that's just the way it is. Next week, we'll have our rest of the 2016 best of, and we also will have some updates. Unfortunately, we had another musician pass away over the weekend, so it's been, it's been tough. And then also we have all the stats, so all that will be next week. So come and tune in, download, share, whatever it is you do, keep it up, because you're keeping the Blues alive with each download. And we're still looking at doing a season 6 and 7 in this calendar year, but right now, like I said, we're just thinking on what we want to do, and hopefully we can come up with some good ideas. But anyway, also next week is the Central Iowa Blues Society is doing their big Winter Blues Fest. I'm sure they'll have some sort of celebration for Jimmy's 100th birthday. They wouldn't forget that. They couldn't. They wouldn't do that. Anyway, I hope you have a good Winter Blues Fest if you're there. A lot of great blues acts, including Scotty and the Wingtips, my buddies, are running the jam session. So, be there. And we'll see you next week on the Iowa. Let's see what this is. Okay, that's interesting. That may not be good news. All right, that was just a Super Bowl update. Okay, gotta go because I want to get this going so you can download it tonight. So, ladies and gentlemen, have a good evening from the Iowa Blues Showcase.
You can breathe the air. You won't find